I want to thank my co-authors, Brad, Jeremy, Carletta, and John Healy, all of whom are at DRI. And as Manoj mentioned, I was there until just a couple months ago, and I'm now at University of Texas. Just by way of a quick background, a couple years ago, we installed some large wing lysimeters out in Boulder City. And the lysimeters are about 2.25 meter diameter, 3 meters deep. And they've been exposed to ambient conditions under bare soil cover since we installed them. And the upside of this is that it's a fairly simple system, but we're still testing to see how applicable and how representative the lysimeters are for conditions outside of our field plot. And the simplicity of the site allows us to test new kinds of instruments as a way of looking at some fairly fine scale measurements. So the goals that we wanted to test here was to develop a portable micromet system, which I'll describe, that could be used for small scale measurements of above ground heat flux. And we want to compare a number of different technologies looking at bare soil evaporation, the lysimeter, a Bowen ratio system, which is this micromet, the three wire heat pulse probes, and then an eddy covariance tower, which is located on the site. And then to start looking at conditions under which the lysimeters are or are not representative. And so the methods, here's a picture of the lysimeter. This is during installation. And so here's a person of being trying to avoid falling in the hole. You can see his steel-toed boots. And so we have four different methods, and we're trying to compare them during sort of cool, wet periods in the late spring to summer periods where it's warm and dry, and then in sort of a cold, wet period where we have an active wetting front. And this is just the surface of the lysimeter. You can see this is right after it was completed. There's a gap here of probably 7 to 8 millimeters across, but it's completely free floating. We've calibrated the scale, and we can down to about 0.04 millimeters of water change. So it's fairly highly accurate, and I'll be able to show you some of the data where it works and where the accuracy starts to diminish, I think. And so we also developed through a couple of other guys that are the co-authors, a small, what we call a digital atmospheric and miniature instrumentation tower, or a DAMIT. And I didn't call it that, but it just stuck. You know, it's one of those terms that we just couldn't get rid of. And the DAMIT is really composed of small digital sensors. It's the same sensors that Vaisala uses in their relative humidity temperature device that they sell. And it's very small. The thing is about 20 millimeters by 2 millimeters thick, and it's completely digital. So we can collect data very, very quickly with this. The accuracy is pretty good. It's 0.05% relative humidity. It's 0.1 degrees C. And so what we did is we put these things into a small tower, and this is hanging right on top of the lysimeter so that we can really measure the heat flux and the temperature right above the soil surface at 5, 10, 25, and 50 centimeters. And we're collecting the data fairly rapidly, and with a Campbell data logger, it can be programmed and measured, programmed pretty easily. And in front of it, and you're looking here in the picture on the left, in the foreground is an eddy covariance tower. We're looking downwind, so there's about 100 meter fetch, 75 meter fetch, and then there's some disturbances in the way of a stone wall, and there are some homes and things that are kind of further away. So it's to the back here of the site. And of course, there's going to be some questions in terms of both fetch disturbance as well as, you know, if somebody's irrigating, if there's a pool or something like that. What effect does this really have on the ability of the lysimeter to be representative in the broader valley? And so this was something that we've been sort of stressing over, and we wanted to try to address this by measuring the conditions right over the lysimeter itself, as well as kind of as a way of sort of tying the eddy covariance data directly to what's happening on top of the site. And so this is just the method using a typical Bowen ratio, which is the sensible divided by the latent heat flux. And what the key here is that we're measuring temperature at two heights at 25 and 50 centimeters above ground surface, and then we're measuring relative, basically, the vapor pressure. at the same heights. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what some of the limitations are, since it's a little bit unusual to have something that's sort of this low to the ground and sitting on bare soil. We did all the corrections and gap filling following the method of Malik and others from Utah State. We also used the three-wire heat pulse sensors, and these are this is sitting on what was termed the Titanic. I'm not really sure why, but hopefully it's not sort of rearranging the chairs on the Titanic. And so it's a little bit hard to tell, but the top wire for the first probe on the left is at the same height as the bottom wire for the second probe over. And so the idea is that the probes are basically stacked right on top of one another, and we can measure the water content in successive depths from 0 to 12 millimeter, from 12 to 24, and so on. And by looking at the change in the moisture content, we can start to see where how the water is actually leaving the soil within the soil fabric itself. And whether it's moving upward, whether it's sort of moving out through vapor transport. And this is the same concept that Robert Horton and his group has been working on over the years. I think Josh Heitman has been working on this as well. And so I want to just go into some of the results, and we're still crunching through a lot of the numbers. And I'm going to really focus on this April period and then July. And the first is just to give you a sense of how the temperature is changing as a function of height above the lysimeter. And so we're looking at date here on the X and air temperature on the Y axis. And you can see that there's definitely a temperature gradient, at least during the peaks, and also a little bit during the trough. So the soil itself is pretty warm, and then it cools as we go higher up. So we're getting an upward, basically an upward gradient in temperature, and it's the same for humidity during the day. And so we had some confidence that that worked pretty well. And although I don't have a figure to show it, we also took a number of the sensors and put all of them at the same height and ran them for a long period of time to see if there was any intersensor variability. And for people who view Bowen ratio, typically you're switching to remove the bias in the instrument, you're sort of switching the sensors from in a routine way so that you're sort of canceling out the bias. And here the sensors are in fixed position. So we wanted to see if there was any variability and how we might be able to account for that. And we showed that there was no difference in the sensors, so that they seem to be pretty solid. We also looked at sort of variability of how sensitive the solution to cumulative flux is based on the uncertainty in the instrument itself. So this somewhat confusing graph here shows where we took the mean deviation of the five sensors that are all at the same height, and then we systematically added and subtracted them from the temperature values as we were recalculating the flux. And so the daily variance, you know, sort of each one of the measurements was down at about 0.25 millimeters. But you can see how the errors really begin to accumulate as you sum them up to a point where, you know, if you're really minimizing evaporation, we're down only at about 2 millimeters a day. And if we maximize it, it's above 5. So it's fairly sensitive to what the instrumentation and the uncertainty in the instrumentation were. And again, we're sort of trying to see how we might be able to filter that out. And somewhere buried in here is basically the mean flux, which is about 3. So if we want to compare the lysimeter, the eddy flux, and the dammit, that's kind of what this graph does for April. And so the little dots here are the lysimeter. They're showing fairly regular increases as the soil is drying out. There was, for people who were in the Southwest last winter, it was very heavy rain, very heavy precip in the Southwest U.S., and so the soil was still evaporating out pretty good. This was occurring during very heavy winds, and so the lysimeters are really susceptible to high winds, it seems. But I wanted just to leave the data in there so you can really get a sense. It looks just like the flux is just falling off, but it's really just noise from higher wind. The eddy covariance, it's a little bit higher than the eddy covariance would suggest, but the dammit really shows that it's tracking the lysimeters fairly well. So we think that, insofar that the method itself has limitations, we think it seems to be tracking reasonably well what the lysimeters are measuring. Now, if we do the same thing where we're looking at the heat pulse probes basically show no flux from the top 48 millimeters. It was really interesting and a little bit disappointing that we weren't really able to see any flux. And I think the reason for that is that the soil itself, by the time late April moves around or mid-April, is already reasonably dry. And so the drying front is actually below the 48 millimeters that where we're doing the measuring. And I think that what's happening is that the vapor is moving upward. It's moving upward into the soil. Sometimes during the day, it sort of increases what the water storage is within that, you know, within that zone, and then it's basically gone. So it really didn't do very well here for measuring evaporation at the really shallow desert soils that we were looking at. If we try to do this again in July, where it's quite dry, there's a very poor monsoon by the time July rolled around, we see, again, there's sort of a bifurcation of how represented the lysimeters are. And you can see the eddy covariance flux here is still about 3.5 millimeters over this time period. And this is from all of the upwind sources that are essentially rolling over. You know, it's probably several hundred meters of a footprint. And so we're measuring that. We're not able, but the lysimeters themselves are really a point measurement, and we're not seeing hardly any evaporation on that at all. And during the summertime, it seems to track perhaps a little bit better, and my guess is it's just because the values themselves are so low that they seem to be within the same range. But still, as a methodology here, I think that the dammit seems to work reasonably well. And the three-wire heat pulse probe also, I don't have the data here, but the systems, when it's really, really dry, it's hard to get accurate water content measurements on really dry soils. And so I was hoping to have the numbers filtered out and presentable, but I didn't want to show crummy data, so I don't have the data at all to show. But I think it's going to show really, really low values. But what was interesting is the ability of the of the thermal probes to actually measure wetting fronts. And so this is a storm event that occurred in 2008. And what you're looking at here is the lysimeter is in the red dots. The dots are all kind of close together, so it looks like a line. And then the yellow is from the thermal probes, where we're summing up the increase in the water content in these successive depths as the wetting front moves down. And so it does a really nice job at actually detecting wetting fronts down within the range of the probes. And I think perhaps that's a real advantage of having that. It's seeing where the water really is within the top portion of the probe. And so just to sum up, the Micromet system, the dam, it seems to work pretty well even on bare soil, but we have to address some limitations of the method. For example, the Bowen ratio itself was above 3 for both of the two time periods. And the Bowen systems really, the methodology really isn't used very commonly in bare soils and in playas and things like that, because it's so dominated by sensible heat flux that the system doesn't seem to work very well. So we're trying to work through some of the transfer coefficient issues so that we can kind of nail down the numbers and keep them within a range of sort of acceptability. The thermal sensors work really well within the surface, and I showed that how nicely it matched. I think the R squared was somewhere north of 0.95, so it was quite accurate. We really need to install sensors that are deeper so that we can capture some of the evaporation that's occurring below the top 50 millimeters or so. During the springtime, the lysimeter seemed to sort of accurately measure fairly large-scale flux as from these larger upwind sources. And again, this is during the initial dry down where the soils were, you know, really starting to heat up and to dry out from the summertime. But that by the time the summertime rolls around, where it's really warm and dry, the system, at least from the eddy covariance side, is really dominated by these upwind sources. So what we have to do is really focus more on measuring atmospheric conditions right above the lysimeter for those periods, and rely less on the eddy covariance as a way of instituting atmospheric drivers and things like that. And so with that, I'm happy to take any questions. Yeah?
In my limited experience, it seems like you can do better than 1/10 of a degree C for atmospheric spike. Is a tenth good enough, or isn't that some of your error, instrumental error?
Well, it could be. I mean, that's just thermistors are. I agree that that we could probably put some thermistors out there, and I think that could be the technology that they're using. What we wanted to do is just to test test these particular sensors. And I was just sort of relaying back the manufacturers, their specs.
There are people here with a lot more experience than I am,
yeah.
But they can be calibrated individually.
Right. No, I think that's probably the next step, is to see if we can get maybe an order of magnitude better than 0.1. Yeah.
This Mark. Is dust.
So you had a figure there showing the cumulative evaporation from the lysimeter in the summer, and it didn't go anywhere. I mean,
right. It
went up and down. I mean, it was moving, though.
It was moving.
It didn't seem to accumulate, though. What was going on there?
Well, I think that it's I can't say whether there may be some temperature effect on the scale, which I doubt. We've really looked at that. Maybe
well,
there are some
3 meters down, right, or something?
It's 2-3 meters down, right. And so, and we have monitored intensively the room itself to see if the system itself is being affected by temperature. And it's, you know, over the diurnal type of variation, there isn't. And so perhaps if this is dewfall, you know, and I think that it may be that. It's something that we're trying to take where we see these kind of oscillations and identify them as being real or something monitored. But I think in this particular case, it could be dewfall, even though we're way, way, way above dew point. I mean, it's 10% humidity, right? So sub-zero dew point.
Next to you, Mike, a big hand.
Okay. Thanks.